Hi, I'm Warren Giroux, Senior Investment Consultant with Sightline Wealth Management. We are bringing you a series of conversations with a select group of alternative investment managers Sightline works closely with. These managers specialize in private debt, private mortgages, long and short equity strategies, among others. As part of the discussion, we will touch upon governance, transparency, portfolio positioning, current strategy trends, and future opportunities in the asset class. Good morning. I'm Warren Giroux with Sightline Wealth Management, and I'm here this morning with Maria Smirnova and Kree Kagudkar, co-portfolio managers and sub-advisors of the 9-Point Precious Metals Fund and the 9-Point Silver Equity Fund. Good morning to you both, and thanks for taking the time. Let's start with the macro picture and the price of gold. There's a lot of theories out there, and some gold bugs have been had their theories challenged recently with regards to things like gold is supposed to be a hedge against markets going down. Usually when you think of money supply, when money supply explodes, you would think that gold should go up. The same thing with inflationary pressures. When you have inflation, gold is also a hedge against inflation. Lately, it doesn't seem that that's been playing out. So do you have any thoughts?
Well, good morning, Warren, and thank you for inviting us to chat with you. Sure, I'd love, you know, you covered a lot in that first question, a lot of subjects, but I think the way I like to look at gold and silver, they're monetary assets. They're hard assets that cannot be debased or devalued. And, you know, when we think about the money supply exploding, in fact, gold and silver have done quite well in recent times. I mean, notwithstanding the last, you know, few months, I would say, if you look on a longer term, gold and silver have done, especially gold, has done really well versus all major asset classes. You know, even the S&P, like if you bond, if you compare it to other classes, it's done really well. So I like to think of it on a longer term perspective. And I also don't necessarily, you know, we've had what, 3 to 5% inflation in recent months. In the grand scheme of things, it's still, inflation is still not at levels that you would consider high inflation or even hyperinflation. And of course, gold can do very, very well in hyperinflation, but we're not there yet nearly. So I don't, and you know, there's a big debate going on right now, and I've read so many different people either way. There's a debate about inflation and whether it's transitory, and how do we measure inflation? What things do we look at when we think about inflation? Of course, when we think about inflation, we look at the CPI, the Consumer Price Index. However, the Federal Reserve, which is the monetary policy setting body in the U.S., looks at PCE. That's a different measure. It's in fact, right now, it's measuring a bit lower than the CPI. And projections for PCE are to go down going forward. So, again, you know, we're not starting with a high rate of inflation right now. And we're still, you know, I would say the market is undecided about whether we will have this inflation persist and for how long. So I think when I think about gold and silver, to me, the fundamental backdrop is highly, highly positive on a longer term basis, medium to longer term basis. Now, I will completely admit that we will potentially have more volatility. I mean, gold and silver are volatile. Sometimes on a daily basis, prices move when we have a news headline one way or another. But on a longer term basis, the tailwinds are still with us. Nothing has changed in the last few months to change your view in the longer term, and I will explain that. To me, again, thinking about monetary inflation, and you know, I just watched a video by Ray Dalio, and that's exactly what he said. You know, 3% inflation doesn't faze me. I don't get excited about it. What I think about is monetary inflation, monetary assets. So what has happened, and particularly with COVID, but even before COVID, is we've had a lot of money printing. We've had, first of all, the U.S. is in twin deficits, the budget deficit and trade deficit. So that's meant that the government has had to issue lots and lots of treasuries to finance spending. That's also meant that the Federal Reserve has had to buy a lot of these treasuries, which has resulted in an exploding balance sheet, both at the Federal Reserve and actually at the ECB and other central banks. And that's what's helped gold particular, but silver also. And we can talk about silver separately because it has slightly different drivers, or it has more drivers, I should say, than gold. And that hasn't changed. Unless we think that the United States and other countries can solve their deficit issues, you know, this will continue. We're at record levels for government debt. You know, to finance that again, I don't see how the central banks won't continue doing what they have been doing, and that is expanding their balance sheet. As a result, we've also been in a period of low interest rates, zero to low interest rates, and in fact, negative real interest rates. The 10-year real rate in the U.S. right now is close to minus 0.9%. And it has been there for a while now. And in fact, last week when we had the Fed meeting and we had a little bit of a sell-off, nothing changed. The real rate is still minus 0.9%. I mean, if anything, the dollar has perked up. But again, fundamentally to us, nothing's changed. So I hope that addresses your question. Warren, you're mute.
Sorry. Regarding the expansion of the monetary base, if we go back to 2000 and say 2008, 2009, I mean, we really started to see the explosion in the monetary base. And gold, I think, if I'm not correct, peaked somewhere around 2011. And since then, the monetary base has been expanded rapidly as well as the debt levels. And yet gold and silver are just sort of, at least gold is just sort of back to its high that we had in 2011, or it did peak out there a while ago. So how do you address that that issue that money supply over the last 10, 15 years has really exploded, but yet gold is almost back where it was?
Well, so in 2013, we had a taper tantrum, right? Obviously, the Fed, mm-hmm. again, to me, it's all driven by not even necessarily the monetary base, but what we are seeing, what we're hearing in the market, and what the Fed says, what the ECB says. And we went through a period of readjustment there because the Fed tapered. And the Fed, actually in 2018, they got to a point where they made the mistake of raising rates, 2017, 2018, right? Mm-hmm. And why do I say it was a mistake? Well, because they had to quickly reverse course in 2019, like so a year later, because they realized the economy was actually slowing down again. So, and that's what I mean, that in the short term, there might could be volatility. I don't think we're going to see that again. The world has changed in the last close to 10 years since the GFC. There's way more debt now, first of all. If you look at the Fed's balance sheet, they tried to reduce it. It didn't work. They had to, again, do more and more QE. But, I mean, the line is up and to the, like, pretty vertical, in fact, right? It's crazy what's happened. I mean, they're still issuing $120 billion of paper a month, right? So, yeah, will we see volatility and potential sell-offs? Yes. But can we time it? No. My crystal ball is broken in terms of timing. So for us, we stay invested. And, if there is a dip, you know, we try to use that as a buying opportunity, in fact. And in terms of our portfolios, and we can get into that more, you know, the way we structure portfolios is we're very bottom-up driven in terms of the names we put into the portfolio. I also call it success-based. So if a company starts out with a small position and we see that they're achieving the milestones that they've outlined, we add to it. But that's an aside. So what I'm saying is for us, our long-term view remains from the perspective of, you know, unless the world changes on its axis tomorrow, our long-term view has for gold and silver have not changed. And therefore, we are almost fully invested, but we're stock pickers.
So what do you think the key drivers of gold and silver prices going forward, just fundamentals? Or do you think there's going to be monetary pressures, inflationary pressures or not? You sort of said, indicated you think the inflation is going to be transitory. So what's going to drive or help push the precious metal prices much higher from here?
Well, I personally think that, you know, not the government, but the central banks, like the Fed especially, they want the economy to run hot. They need the economy to grow quickly. And therefore, that's why they want inflation. They want maximum employment. I mean, that's what they stress. That's their two targets, higher inflation and maximum employment. And that, by definition, means you need to rev up the economy. So, yes, we've had some good quarters of good GDP growth, and hopefully that will continue. But that also actually will mean higher inflation. Right. So that's why I said it's a debate about inflation. Right. I don't think anyone has the answer just now. But I know that the Fed needs GDP to go up in order to grow the economy out of the debt situation that they're in. Now, how do you achieve that? Well, so far, the unemployment rate officially is 5.8%. I believe the last data point we have. But the participation rate has dropped, hence the employment rate, or the unemployment rate, apologies, adjusted for the participation rate is actually 9%. So it's over 3 percentage points higher than the official rate. What does that say to me? Well, that means people left the workforce, they've given up, obviously. But why? You know, we've been handing out checks. We have that in Canada. We have CERB in Canada. In the U.S., they are also handing out checks, right? So A, that demotivates people to some degree. B, there's some jobs that go unfilled because they can't find somebody to, you know, pay enough wage. But we're not at full employment as Fed would like it, right? So let's watch employment. Let's watch the job numbers, because that's the second half of the equation, what the Fed watches in order to set monetary policy, right? And I think fundamentally the Fed is still very dovish. I mean, if you listen to Powell, even last week, it was still very dovish, right? Or 2 weeks ago, sorry. So again, I think that's a great environment for gold and silver. Now, again, to go another point would be, in order for the economy to start growing faster, we will need to see more stimulus. You know, we are talking about infrastructure packages. I think last week we saw something like $1 trillion. That's not enough. I've heard a number. We need at least $5 trillion in infrastructure spending to rev up the economy, right? So we'll see what happens. But I think the spending will continue. And that means, again, deficit. And that means we need more more treasuries to be issued, et cetera, et cetera.
So at this point in time, do you favor one precious metal over another based on your view and the production and leverage, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, I think that's a good gateway into silver, frankly. As I mentioned, silver has slightly different drivers, or it has more drivers, because essentially half of silver's demand goes into monetary / investment kind of uses, you know, coins, bars, ETFs, et cetera. But the other half is strictly industrial, you know. And what does that mean? Well, it goes into all kinds of electronics. It goes into still it goes in photography, but on a declining scale, in medical uses. Silver has great antibacterial and electroconductive properties. In fact, I think it's like second highest electroconductive metal behind gold. Now, gold's very expensive. That's why we use silver. So what does that mean? Silver is greatly used in all these, in cars, for example. That's one area of growth that we're seeing and we've written articles about. And as we transition to greener energy and greener vehicles, so as we're transitioning from internal combustion engine to hybrids and then to electric vehicles and ultimately to autonomous vehicles, the loadings of silver in cars are going up. So we are seeing growth in the auto sector. The other sector we're very excited about is the solar sector, right? We've seen a lot of growth. It's already 10% of the silver market. And if we have infrastructure spending, President Biden has stressed green energy. He has stressed electric vehicles, solar panels, all the uses that silver is used in, you know, will be beneficial if we have any type of infrastructure spend. So I think, I guess, the short answer, we're probably more bullish on silver because it has that twin driver. It's still a monetary asset. It's still a hard asset, but it's also used in areas where we actually really need silver. And what I have seen over the last, I've been doing this for, since, you know, I've been looking at silver very closely for like a decade now. It's not a very long time, but I mean, I've studied the market, and to me, that's very exciting what's going on the demand side. But on the supply side, in the last 5 to 7 years, I would say in the downturn of the metals prices, we haven't seen a lot of investment into exploration, development, building new mines. We haven't seen big silver mines come on. I mean, I can count them likely on two hands. At the same time, some of the large mines are actually, their grades declining. We've seen grade decline. We're mining lower and lower grades, so we have to build more and more capacity to maintain production. So on the supply side, you know, I don't see a lot of growth. So supply is constrained. We're not I would never say we're peak silver or anything like that, but, you know, we are not anticipating fast supply growth. We'll probably have a pickup in the scrap supply, fair enough, but ultimately, I think the demand growth will likely outweigh supply growth, which again supports the price and should support the price going forward. And hence, silver has done better since the COVID crisis, since over a year ago, than gold. It has outperformed. And I remember in the beginning of 2020, silver was literally written off for dead. I mean, the ratio was 120-1, and nobody wanted to talk to me about silver, right? So I think there's already been a turnaround, and we expect that to continue.
Okay. Why don't we turn to the portfolio now, and if I may, Sheree, can you give us an idea? Well, let's start with the precious metals portfolio first, and then we'll talk about silver. Maria, you can maybe address the silver, but on precious metals, how many names do you currently have, Sheree, in the portfolio? In the precious metals portfolio?
In the gold and precious minerals fund, we have around 60 names in our portfolio. But the number of the 60 names are not uniformly distributed, of course. We have a fairly high level of concentration in the top 10 names. Almost, I would say, about 45-46% of our portfolio typically is concentrated in the top 10. And the remaining 50 names in the portfolio obviously are sprinkled across into more on the exploration development side of the equation.
So in the precious minerals fund, so do you have a bias in that portfolio as well, or is there sort of equally weighted among several of the precious minerals?
The way we differentiate the gold and precious minerals fund is by overweighting it towards companies which are producing today, which are free cash flowing today, which are profitable today. And we particularly like to see companies that have a very disciplined approach towards capital allocation. And by and large, I would say our primary exposure is towards the mid and small tier group of companies, because in addition to being highly profitable, they're also able to grow organically within their means with some of the undeveloped projects that they have within their portfolio. And that's a challenge. Growth is a challenge for a lot of the larger companies. So our bias towards the small and mid-tier companies is driven for two reasons. First, we see better value there. And secondly, when large cap companies like the Barricks, the Newmonts need to grow, they need to come out and buy some of these small and mid cap companies in order to add to their portfolios and replace the production that they're losing on an annual basis.
So if you were to look at the portfolio, would you have as many gold companies in there as silver, or any other precious mineral, or is it primarily focused on the gold side, this particular fund, the precious mineral fund?
That's a great question. So I would say that, the name spells it out, right? It's gold and precious minerals. So our primary focus is always in gold with this particular fund. But we have a fairly good allocation towards silver. I think it's close to 20% of our portfolio. And we also have a reasonable allocation into the platinum group metals as well. So we have almost, I would say, a high single-digit type exposure towards companies that are producing and or exploring for platinum, palladium, rhodium, et cetera.
I know you can't.
Time and again. So just to finish the point, and time and again, we have also invested in diamond companies as well, although we currently don't have any exposure towards any diamond producers.
Okay, thank you. If we were to look at the portfolio, is it a portfolio with a high turnover, or is it pretty constant with, as you mentioned, a couple of really big or quite a few big names and low turnover?
I would characterize our portfolio, all the portfolios that we manage, obviously, they are actively managed, so we have to be active in terms of taking a look at our portfolio on a daily basis and evaluating whether or not there has been any change in our thesis to any particular name that is in the portfolio. And to that end, I would say we typically would be in the middle of the range in terms of how active we are. We are not as active as some of the most high turn or high turn portfolios that you'll find on the street, but we're also not as low in our turnover in terms of some of the, I would say, more of the bank run portfolios that tend to be more or less indexed to, or they're trying to index themselves to their benchmark. We try and tread in the middle of those two. And by doing so, we're able to keep the MERs at a reasonable level, but at the same time, still provide our investors with the opportunity to create the highest amount of alpha that can be had in this specific sector.
I know you can't mention any names specifically, but are there any stories out there of stocks that you found recently that you're pretty excited about, new additions to the portfolio?
Yeah, we generally don't talk about particular names, but yeah, there are many companies that we are quite excited about on a daily basis, really. As far as the gold and precious minerals fund is concerned, I'll just go back to the point I made earlier. We really enjoy companies that are highly free cash flow positive, are highly profitable, are paying good dividend yields, or even buying back shares. And if you go through some of our top 10 holdings, those are the type of companies that we're truly excited about, because when companies are able to grow within their means, generate double-digit free cash flows on an annual basis, pay out a healthy dividend, but at the same time, and also buy back shares, for instance, and some of the companies in our top 10 are starting to do just that. That's what really gets us quite excited about what we've uncovered, and that's what helps us build our conviction towards these names.
So if we were to look at, investors to look at your fund, they wouldn't be buying a fund that was focused on exploration. You're focused on more, you know, as you say, companies generating cash flow, dividends, and so forth, a steadier environment than the Wild West, so to speak.
I would agree with that. I would say about 80% of our portfolio is towards companies which are producing today. But that's not to say we significantly underweight exploration. It's quite the opposite. We have a fairly high number of names in our portfolio which are geared towards exploration and development, but we're also highly selective in the type of names that we buy into our fund that are more on the exploration and development side. Oftentimes the way we get exposure to companies that are in the exploration and development side of things is through secondary offerings, whereby we're able to come in at a discounted price to where the stock is currently trading at or was trading at the time the deal was announced. And in addition, we're also able to secure warrants, which are really long-dated options, that help provide additional leverage should the company be successful in its effort. So that way, we're able to magnify our exposure to the companies as they are able to delineate more gold or more silver or more platinum or more palladium on their properties. In doing so, as this sort of wealth creation happens through the drill bit, our portfolios are able to get higher and higher exposure to through the options that we also have in our portfolio. So when I say the 80-20 split between producers and exploration, I usually try and not include the free options that we get. But they can be very valuable, especially when any of these metals start to run.
Mm-hmm. One more question on the precious mineral fund. What's the current AUM?
The Gold and Precious Minerals Fund has around $155 million of AUM.
Have you been seeing inflows into that fund recently, most recently, with the concerns of the macro concerns that are going on out there?
Interestingly, we started seeing inflows just around the time when we saw that big decline in the price of gold. So over the last couple of weeks, we start to see some modest inflows coming in. And I think it just speaks to the a very simple fact that investors, who especially the well-informed investors, are taking a look at some of these equities that we are invested in and also are in many of the indices, obviously. And they're realizing that there is tremendous value to be had in precious metal equity investing, be it for gold, silver, or platinum and palladium. And when you're able to uncover a company that has grown its earnings by multiples of 100% and is currently paying a dividend and happens to trade at single-digit price-to-earnings ratio or a low double-digit price-to-earnings ratio, it's a spectacular bargain. And we are able to uncover these on an almost daily basis. And I think that's the reason why some of the investors are choosing to allocate more of their assets into this space now.
Yeah, thank you. If we can turn to the silver fund, Maria, I know that's a favorite of yours. I mean, when we look at the market recently, we've seen the price of silver, it's rebounded from its lows. So really, I guess in one way of looking at it, as sort of a contrarian view, you're looking at the survivors. When we see the price of silver, moving up slightly here, we must be seeing the bottom line explode on some of these silver producers.
Well, yes, every in dollar increase in the price of the metal, it's almost 100%, after tax, I guess not 100%, but it's very leveraged to the prices of the metals. Now, in terms of the 9-point silver equities class, I think it's actually more slanted towards exploration at this stage. Now, the silver market is smaller to begin with. The companies are smaller on average than the gold companies, so the market caps are smaller. And at this stage in the game, the fund is between 60 and 70% producers and the rest in exploration. Now, why am I excited about exploration is because, as Sreet said, that's, it's very important for the industry, right? We need to put money into the ground to find new deposits to have future mines. And that's why there's a kind of a big emphasis on exploration. And you asked earlier about whether there's any kind of companies that we're excited about. And I would say, in generally speaking, in the last couple of years, we've seen a resurgence of exploration companies. There is money in the sector to be put into the ground for drilling and finding ounces. And it's been great because there's new projects that are springing up, new kind of management teams are moving around and to new projects. So, and particularly for silver, I've seen a lot of activity in Mexico, actually. There's been some activity even in the United States. So there's lots going on, which makes it quite fun.
So how large is the silver fund now? What's the AUM of that fund?
It's about $250 million.
Wow, that's quite a large fund. Is any reason that's become that large relative to the precious mineral fund, or?
Well, as far as we know, it's a very unique fund. Nobody else focuses on silver. You know, there's some ETFs, but in terms of active management, it's one of its kind. So it's attracted some attention because of that.
Okay. So is the silver fund sort of structured almost the same way as the precious mineral fund in that you have a large weighting in, say, the top 10 names, or is it more diversified on a weighting basis?
It's probably less diversified on a weighting basis, but it's definitely more diversified than the ETFs that I track. So the top 10 holdings last time I checked were about 55%.
So how many names?
Portfolio.
How many total names would be in the portfolio?
I aim to have between 40 and 50 names.
Okay. And again, is it sort of low turnover on the top end of the portfolio?
I view the producers as kind of, you know, sources of cash when there's an interesting opportunity to be deployed in a junior. You know, at one point that fund had a very large weighting in the top royalty streaming silver company that's very well known, but that is no longer the case because, again, I was able to find new ideas and recirculate the money into these new ideas.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that pretty well covers most of my questions. Is there anything else that either of you would like to add to for our listeners they should know about the space? Go ahead, Tree.
So one of the things that we always love to tell investors about is that unlike many other sectors or other sector funds or broader market funds, both the gold and precious minerals fund as well as the silver equities class fund has traditionally outperformed the index and during bull trends has been a spectacular outperformer against the index. And part of it has to do with the way we position our fund. It is quite, both the funds are well differentiated from the index and our preference for the small and mid-tier companies tends to produce a higher leverage to the upside. So for the long term, if investor is benefiting versus the index, and especially during the bull market runs, it makes a lot of sense for investors to seek out properly run, well-run, actively managed funds as opposed to ETFs, because this is one of the few spaces that I can think of where having exposure to an ETF can actually produce more inferior returns versus an actively run fund, which has a differentiated strategy. So I would strongly encourage investors to take a look at actively managed products versus ETFs as far as the precious metal space is concerned.
I guess I'd be remiss if I didn't ask this final question. I know you're going to give me a wild guess, but where do you see things going from here? I mean, gold and silver and precious metals, are they going to keep bouncing around at this levels, or do you see something in the near future in the next couple of years that should propel gold and silver to much higher levels from here?
Well, I think Maria touched on a number of points, which are very, 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 very important at the beginning of our conversation, which produce very fertile grounds for significantly higher prices of both gold as well as silver, and silver in particular. When you look at how the current economic landscape is laid out, it's not that dissimilar to how things looked for the U.S., for Canada, for other developed countries coming out of World War I, World War II. This is COVID was is like a, this is wartime. This is the modern wartime that, that we have kind of seen. And coming out of this, deaths are much higher. There needs to be additional stimulus that has to take place. There's a percentage of the workforce that needs to be incentivized to re-enter the workforce again. And this is precisely the kind of environment that produces sustained periods of negative real yields. We saw this in the early 1920s. We saw this once again in the mid-1940s after World War II ended. And we saw this on the other side of the Vietnam War as well in the 1970s. So these periods of negative real yields are precisely the periods where precious metals tend to shine. And we're entering this right now. So we are very positive in terms of how both of these metals will do. And we're even more so positive towards how the equities look today. It's very rare to find the combination of earnings growth as well as very inexpensive valuations that we currently see in the space today. So it's very difficult for me to recall periods that I've been this excited for the precious metals over the next 2 to 5 years.
Well, thank you for that. Maria, do you have any additional thoughts?
Well, I would just add, and Sri mentioned this, you know, to us, we look at valuations of precious mineral stock versus other sectors and versus the S&P 500. And, you know, if you look at it on an EV to EBITDA basis, gold stocks are at half of the valuation, if I'm not mistaken, of S&P 500. Is that right, Sri? Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we view the space as not only not overvalued, but very undervalued right now. At the same time, we're seeing money come into the space in the sense that when a company wants to raise money, they are able to. And oftentimes these deals are oversubscribed, which tells me there are people looking to deploy capital in the space. And that is leading to some exciting, you know, exciting companies being formed, some exciting news releases coming out, some discoveries. I mean, it's an interesting time, definitely.
So you're almost leading me to believe that we're looking at a value play here versus a growth play at the moment, just based on fundamentals.
Yeah, and I think we've been saying it for a while now that these things were left for dead, and you know, a question will be, well, how do we, what catalyst, you know, when do people realize how cheap the space is and return to it in droves?
Okay. Well, thank you for that. Well, I'll leave it at that for the time being. And I want to thank you both for taking the time and letting our listeners know what the outlook is for gold, precious metals, and your two funds, the 9-point Precious Minerals Fund and the 9-point Silver Equity Fund. So thank you both.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you, Warren.